appreciate all of your patience. It's as I've tried to explain to people, it's one of the hardest things that I have to do in just making my big presentations, is to try to get people to understand the whole process of when we as Christians truly, with the best intentions of helping, are actually hurting the very people we're trying to help, not understanding that whole process of how we can do that. So I appreciate your patience letting me to kind of cover that ground yesterday. This morning in particular, what I wanted to do was take you through a slide presentation. And these are all the things that we're doing in Ghana. And they've been actually degree successful all over West Africa. And again, I'll just acknowledge, you know, we got the idea from the Chalmers group. We didn't specifically develop it, but I won't kid you, I've modified it a little bit to fit. And some of the things that we talked about yesterday, where they said, hey, don't do this, I found situations that you could do it, and it is successful, but it's in rare circumstances. But rather than say, just don't do it, I'd rather share it with CY, because there may be an appropriateness at a place with a certain group of people that something that they have not had the success and joy of seeing happen, I have, and it may be a benefit to you. So I'm kind of going to open up all the things we do, and then we'll spend some time going through, actually mapping out, and do a little brainstorming, and let you share with us, as you were doing yesterday, to say, what piece of this could we use? What piece of this, and we can talk about those together. That sounds all right. So basically, just for reference, as you can see, Ghana is right next to Nigeria, almost. Just two slivers of countries over. And it is a long flight. Typically takes me, depending on whether I'm going through Europe or a direct flight, anywhere from 12 to 18 hours when I'm making that trip over. I had prepared a part of this particular presentation for our church to give last year. And basically, and what I was sharing, the fact was that Ghana was on a firm foundation. Our missionary that had been in the field 40 years had retired. We're having the largest literacy classes that they've ever had. The schools you'll see here in just a little bit are all performing at a better rate, but it's just proven that without a full-term traditional missionary on the field, the nationals can do it and are better equipped to do it many times as long as we help them in an appropriate way. This is actually a national pastor, similar to the way CY functions over there. This is Abraham Nakome and his wife Leah. They actually live in southern Ghana. And it was an ironic story I thought I'd share with you, because again, you have no idea. Sometimes the things that are meant to happen, and you don't know how you're going to be involved in it. This gentleman had came over to the United States to Bob Jones University to complete his doctorate degree. And Nancy Ball, our missionary from our church, had been in northern Ghana for 40 years, of course had met him over the years, and he actually missed his flight out of South Carolina to get back to Africa. And he was basically out of money, didn't know what to do. The only person he really knew outside. And so he called Nancy Ball, our missionary. And Nancy says, well, I'm in Florida. I can't get to you, but I'm going to call my pastor. So my pastor got someone from the church to actually go to South Carolina and get him, brought him to his home, and basically got him set up till they could rearrange another flight. What was sad about the situation is one of the other pastors that Nancy had actually called prior to that was a little closer, unfortunately would not give him access to his home. So that was a profound statement to that man. But you know what was a comment? He actually spoke at our church the following Sunday. And he made the comment. He said, you know, this is so strange to me because I, as a black man, and had been invited into your pastor's home, And he said, I'm almost ashamed to say, but I've been so humbled at the experience that his wife, our pastor's wife was Betty, she actually washes my underclothes. You know, it's that sheer love. And what was unique after we met him, for through that fluke set of circumstances, we developed a relationship. We started supporting him. He now coordinates the Ghana Inland Mission in the southern part of Ghana, and it has 7 churches, a couple of schools, which again you'll see, but all of that developed from that one missed airplane flight. I mean, and you'll see some things related to the schools and things. But like I said, you can't take anything for granted. And it's just like you being here. You being here is meant to be. And it's like I told Dusty when we first started talking about how could I help or what could I do. After it just looked like I couldn't open up my schedule since I run my own company to be able to make a trip over or something, and we started to have that conversation, it really became a burden on my heart to say, what if you could get here? And not that I'm anything special, I'm just want to share, you know? And then to see the opportunity for you men to join and obviously be able to glean some ideas and knowledge that will be supporting to your church and him. And who knows? You may impact somebody else we don't even know about right now. That's what's been an amazing story of all of this. So, as we proceed on, Pastor Abraham, as I was saying, coordinated the Ghana Inland Mission over a number of years. He started with Sege Baptist Church, kind of there in the middle, and then Gateway, and it kind of branched out. And there's more schools. But, like I said, all of that ministry that we now support just came out of just an incredible mistake that at the time. This is Sege Baptist Church, and the reason I wanted to show this, and I want you to understand this building. This building's what's important. I mean, this is Pastor Abraham. This is his son, John. John is actually taking over. Pastor Abraham's 70-some-odd years old now, getting a little up in age. His health is catching up with him some. But John has been raised up. John is the pastor of this church, the original church. And I have spent a lot of time working directly with John, and similar to some of the things we're going to talk about. But this church is a perfect example of some of the things we're going to talk about in financial management and savings. John had the ability, he and his sister attended the Chalmers training course that we paid for the 18 nationals there, and then we sent some of our church members to attend. So he was in the original group. And part of that training comes, and we'll talk about it a little bit, is forming these savings groups within the churches, kind of like we were talking about yesterday. It's a very common function, and it's a very effective function. But they went back and they formed those up. And we had always been, basically, they were painting this church. And every year it costs hundreds of dollars because they're on the coast, and the salt air just corrodes everything. So it just peeled paint off every year, no matter what we did, because of the acidic materials inside the compounds of this structure. So in any case, John started talking to them. They set up their first savings group. They set up another savings group. They started to do some businesses, started to develop. People are tithing, so he goes back to the people and he says, look, all of you got cell phones. He said, can you save one CD in their currency, of course, but just say a dollar at this point. Can you save a dollar a week on your cell phone bill? And could we create a church savings the same way that you've created your inner group savings? Well, sure enough, they did. First year, they were kind of having to borrow a little from it back and forth, but by the second year, which was in 2011, they did not have to borrow one dime. Then they came back when they had $2,000 saved within the church savings account. They put in custom-made iodized aluminum windows. This is complete, the building is completely terrazzoed. And we did not pay one dime of it. They did it themselves. that they did it through using the same tools to develop the micro businesses, they applied it to the church function to sustain it. So I just wanted to share with you, there's other things besides the business model that can help, because part of what I do, just to touch base, when you're dealing and working with some of the poorest people in the world, it's very hard if they have absolutely no cash or no real finances. It's hard for them to tithe. It's hard for them to know that experience that we take for granted of giving back a lot of times. Now, sure, they'll come in with I've seen everything from a bag of corn to try to tithe with, to beans, to a bottle of shea nut oil or whatever, but it's very difficult. So a lot of times, they've never even heard a message on tithing, because a lot of the pastors, and especially the poorest areas, don't preach anything to do with tithing because they don't have anything to tithe with. So what's interesting is these savings develop, people start to accumulate wealth. Part of what I have tried to do is help them to understand the concept of tithing. So therefore, the churches perpetuate themselves. Okay? So that's a piece of it too. Now, adjacent behind this church, they started some years ago after he visited our church. We have a very large Christian school, anywhere from 450 to 525 students at any given time. And after Pastor Abraham visited the school, he had a desire to bring a school up in Ghana. So they started, and again, unfortunately, what was happening, we were sending money over to support he and his wife in their ministry, but we began to find out about half of that was actually helping to feed those children. So all of a sudden, a lot of the dollars going to support the ministry were being consumed. It's not that it wasn't a noble gesture, but it really wasn't the way it was going. So part of my first function when I went over 5 years ago is I looked at this school. And I said, wow, this thing's got a lot of potential. There was 160 kids there. But you know what I noticed is that John, good guy, worked his tail off to do anything for you, but he didn't understand all of the business dynamics of running the school. So half their students were made up of people whose parents, the kids' parents, were in Spain, Libya, various other places, working outside the country. So their income level was at a much higher level than the local. And they weren't charging an appropriate amount for boarding those students and feeding them. So when I looked at all that, I said, it just doesn't look like you're charging the right structure for what this is worth. So we got back, talked to my pastor. We actually sent our principal and administrator of our school over there for a week to get some feedback on Hal, come on in.
Come on in.
Part of what we wanted to do was get some feedback on the proper way to administrate a school. But again, I was a little cringing because I'd already started to touch base, and I'm thinking to myself, if we're going over there at a Western culture in business and we don't want to try to make these people Americans, what are we going to do if we try to do a school the same way? Do we really want that because of the European influences of education and all that in West Africa? So in any case, he put together a 4-page list with all these recommendations, and basically it was pretty harsh. Came back, recommended our missions committee, the trustees, and our pastor. He said, hey, if they don't do all these things, we need just to pull all our funding because it'll never get there. I was going, wow, that's not what I really wanted to hear. So I was going back over within just a short amount of time, and I took that list of stuff. And what I did, though, is I sat down with John, and I said, John, here is the American process. But what we have to do is go through this line by line, and this is important for you, line by line, and say what is culturally different that I do not want to go back to America. I will look at my trustee board. I will look at our school board. I'll look at everybody involved and just flat look them in the eye and say, this is not going to change. This is a cultural issue. Forget it. However, we can improve here, 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 and here. What can we do? And that's what we did. We went through it. So after working through the budgets and looking at everything, and John agreed, he said, no, we can raise the tuition for the boarding students, and we projected out. I said, in 2 years, in April of 2012, you'll be debt-free, you'll be fully self-sustained. And if you will commit to this area, then I will go back to the United States and raise funding to improve the school, because you need six more classrooms. But what we want to do is we want to maintain quality. When you're trying to raise funding in America, one thing that's important just to bear in mind, and for you guys too, that I found, is most people that are willing to, I mean, write the big checks, $50,000, $100,000, they're looking for quality. They're looking for long-term, and especially if you're working with a business community, a lot of times what they're looking for is one-time hit. They don't want to be pulled on every month, but they're willing to give a significant gift at one time and say, okay, I've done my good deed. Because you know what? Some of those people aren't necessarily Christians. They're just wanting to do something good. And that's not necessarily a bad thing either if you reach to it and they understand what you're doing. So you're going to see a bit of a story in this, but I want you to understand the groundwork for it, okay? So we built... came back to the United States, basically got a $55,000 commitment to get the structures up for six classrooms, and this is what they look like, and we got done. I mean, typical, but they're blocked. They had a roof over them, and we had a thin used desk that we could find, sent a container over, and we got them up and running. Once they started to raise the tuition, though, and all of a sudden, now that the kids were in these classrooms instead of some other areas, they took the old classrooms and made them into much nicer dormitories where the kids could live. Well, the parents were coming in and saying, yeah, we'll pay more for that. Oh, you got running water now? Yeah, we'll. So, in other words, it was an encouragement to them, and all of a sudden, it's gradually starting to perpetuate itself. That classroom looks like this today.
Sure.
You know? But John, and you can see him over on the other side, again, he's coordinated every bit of this. All of a sudden, we took him from a limited knowledge administrative capacity and a pastor to actually understanding how to deal, how to project, how to work forward years in advance on curriculum and all these kind of things. So it is a learned skill, the things we're talking about doing, okay? So this was where kids washed their hands to go into just, again, typical thing where they got a container of water and everybody's using the same pail. This was the outhouse for the school. This is what they have today. They have septic systems. They got fully tiled restrooms for boys and girls. But when you're trying to raise funds, and I can show those two pictures to people, the contrast of how their money is spent, and they know there's accountability for it. That's one of the biggest things that's an issue for the United States and why we work with other missions boards, you know, ABE and Baptist Mid-Missions. We deal with all of that stuff, but there's a lot of infrastructure that's not in traditional mission boards. So we actually, at our church, work independently, and we have missionaries all over the world that we coordinate everything for them. They don't function in a traditional mission board. There's a time and place for all of that. But unfortunately, for a lot of people, and obviously Dusty's aware of this, and I'm not sure, but I grew up going to Silcote Baptist Church. I'm a little guy. I went through all the normal stuff. I was baptized there. That's where I met Dusty. But we as Southern Baptists, we put our money in this big mission fund and it goes to the big pie and they do all the stuff. But you never had a one-on-one relationship with a missionary normally. But at our church, we're a fundamental Baptist. So we're not part of any association. So therefore, we have missionaries right now out of our congregation. I'll give you an example. Nancy Ball, she's retired now in Florida, but she still writes up all the literacy work. She's 70-something years old, working every day from Florida instead of being in Ghana to do a medical condition. We've got Paul Horowitz. He flies over the entire world doing training programs, and he's in the Philippines right now. We have a Ruthie who is in Peru doing a program for women who are on drugs and have gotten pregnant and are living in the jails. She set up a home where she literally brings them out of the homes to teach them better conditions. And I'm actually working on a program to actually train those women to be able to develop work skills so eventually and have their own businesses so they can have a way of supporting themselves instead of having to live in prostitution and all those things. We have another husband-wife team that they actually own their own construction company, but 6 months out of the year, they're in Bolivia with an orphanage program down there. I've been there to look at ways to set up micro-businesses for those orphanages to support themselves. I mean, we've got Owen McEwen in Kazakhstan, you know, and they are members of our church. They grew up in our church. So we take and handle all the coordinating the funding as necessary if they need our help to do it. So there's a way to do it, but it's a lot of responsibility how you handle it, you know, type thing. But again, when you go back and all of a sudden somebody sees something like this and people hear about it out of the blue, you get a check for $50,000 because someone says, I'm willing to give because I can see what it's doing. I just want you to understand there's an accountability to it, you know, type thing. Took a couple that had donated $100,000 to this school once they saw what it was doing. They gave the initial 50-something thousand themselves to get the walls up. When we went back over and they saw what John had done by getting these things tiled, because they're on the coast, this blowing sand, it's tough to clean this place. So once we looked at it, we tiled it. Tiling was the best way to maintain it. So we went in there and they had one computer sitting over, there's one right over here, as a matter of fact. This couple was with me, and they do pretty well, obviously. But they sat there and they said, Gary, we need computers in this place. We need a quote on this to get computers in here. And what would it take to get the electrical run, get lights in every building permanently, and what would it take to you know, get the ceilings in the rest of the way? Before we left that week that they were with me, they had committed another $35,000. So, again, it's not to set the stage, but you don't know who is out there that's willing to commit to things. So that's part of it, too. You need the big givers once in a while, but it takes a lot of little givers, you know, type thing. One of the reasons why this school does so well, I shared with you yesterday, that all in this particular region, that every school, 112 schools, did not pass one certification for the Ghanaian education system. Not one. This school is 2 years ahead, at least, in every category. Fluke thing. I come home from my first trip, and I'm trying to explain to Deborah, my wife, and I said, gee, Deborah, I said, books are tough there. I mean, the curriculum is not bad, and it's all done, the national language is English, but it's just a tough way to teach and learn. So, Deborah, I didn't even know it. I just knew I was getting a freight bill of shipments going to Ghana, but, you know, that's okay, whatever she wants to do. And so she was actually going out and finding these more simpler workbooks that's used in the American school system, but they're very, very simple. A lot of pictures. So she was shipping these things over there. Well, unbeknownst to me, my trip the following year as I got over there,
I'm asking John, I said, John, how are the kids? He said, Gary, it's getting better and better. We're moving. He says, those books they ever sent have made an incredible difference. I said, what are you talking about? So he gets them all out and lays them up, and I shoot a photograph, and I told Deborah, I said, well, John, I said, Deborah's just picking these up at random. I said, what do we need to make a complete set? So I come back, I said, Deborah, you've stumbled on something here. So we literally hunted down all the to make all of these complete. And in the process, a year or so ago, we were shipping a container over with more school equipment and all the other things we were doing. Deborah went out to every publisher that made these books, about 12 publishers. She notified every one of them, hey, we're shipping a container gone. Have you got any seconds or any books that you'd like to donate? And she's calling them, no, 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 until she got to the 12th one. And the 12th one said, sure, we got a whole room full of books. We'll be glad to donate. She explained why and what their books had already contributed to, because, again, they could see the accomplishment. They shipped us thousands and thousands of dollars worth of books, and we put them in that container, and they're over there today. So, again, you don't know, but you got to be patient. You got to be persistent in some things, too, whether it's on this side of the ocean or that side of the ocean. Now, what was interesting, when I got over there last March, a year ago, we had subsidized to modify their dining hall. Because when I got there, there's no windows and doors. There was more goats in the dining hall than there was children.
Ooh.
But they needed to be able, because all of a sudden, they had had a request to be able to house and teach up to 200 students. So we need to be able to cycle 50 kids at a time through the dining hall. So when I got over the last month, last March, they had taken their own profits, because they were fully self-sustained, and they were starting to build an expansion to add on to their dining hall themselves. This is just a picture of some of the kids. Now, this is another unique story. My wife takes, and when I came back on the first trip, and I told her, I said, boy, Deborah, the walls are bare. They've got no traditional letter charts or number charts, you know, the things that kids recite from that they put up on the walls and things like that. So Deborah, as usual, she's out hustling up, going asking for donations and gifts, and she ships another big shipment over there, but it's got all the ABCs, and it's got all the letters, and it's for every grade. Well, she didn't know they didn't have a preschool over in Ghana. They just don't normally have that. So John Nicomb's wife, Esther, she's looking at all this preschool material that Deborah had shipped over there. And she said, something needs to be done with this, you know, type thing. So she talked to her husband. She said, John, I've got all kinds of families from all the villages around the school here. They're coming wanting some kind of educational training that will better prepare their children so they can go either into the public school or to the private school. She said, I'd like to do a little daycare program here in this room in our house. So I get over there, and sure enough, Esther's got it up and running with about 15 kids. They put up a canopy outside, and they can get inside that little room over there. And I'm like, wow. She says, Gary, she said, what's so bad? She says, I got another 15 to 17 kids that want to get in this thing, but I don't have enough tables and chairs. Well, John and her had taken every dime of their savings to get this far. So sometimes, and you'll hear a lot of people say, hey, goes back to this whole skin in the game thing. It's important. And it is very important for skin in the game. But when I saw that situation, I just had, and I prayed about it that night at my hotel. I said, Lord, is this time for a loan or is this time for a gift? Because they've already committed everything. They've put all of it on the line to make this happen. So I really felt the burden. I said, this is a gifting moment, not a loan moment. So I said, told John, I said, when we're in town today, I want to make sure I know the pricing of the tables and chairs she needs and whatever else, and let's figure that out. We look at it, it's not that much, it's $300. So we came back and said, Esther, here's $300 from what we can tell. This will get you what you need, and hopefully this will help you, you know, move to the next stage. Well, by the time I got there on the next visit, about 8 months later, she had 42 kids in school. She had built a whole nother building, completely fenced in. All this is nice and painted now. So there's a playground fenced in for the children. She's got four teachers working full time. That's off of a $300 gift after they had committed themselves to it. So like I said, there's a time and a place for everything that goes with this. Now, the thing about all this, and this is just one of the classrooms for the kids in the daycare, is that John, this is his wife, Esther, and once she got freed up, she was able to hire the kids' teachers and everything. She then recommitted herself. She's here working at the school, Shalom Academy, helping prepare lunch. But then she went one more step. She noticed there was a guy coming around to the local public schools in the area, and he was bringing in his little snack wagon, and basically the kids would get their snacks and those kind of things. So she said, he's doing that, I'll do it. So she went out and met with all the vendors of the local areas that make the little pies and the little things, and she set up a consignment program with them. So then she was actually able to go out and build up another small business because she freed herself up from the daycare. So again, it's that apply yourself, you know, type thing. This is another interesting story here, and it shares a little more about some of this stuff as far as dreams and all. We talked about a little bit earlier. This is John's sister, Ruthie. She attended a similar class off of what we were already talking about that was taught over there. Well, her husband was a vice president of the National Ghanaian Bank. And even with her husband working for the bank, one of the toughest things for the West African world is banking relationships, like we talked about yesterday. You can't walk in and make a $5 deposit. They won't do business with you. So Ruthie came back and she was sharing with her husband. She said, you know, she said, there's 150 street vendors just in our villages. And I'm talking about little carts this big with some peppers piled on it or bread or bananas. And the worst part about it is you may have 10 little tables and six of them all selling the same bread. So a lot of what they don't understand is by not having diversity in their marketplaces, they actually drive each other's prices down because everybody's selling the same thing. You'll pass through a village, every table in the village has got the same wood bowl.
Actually, I think the tradition is if you're going to be buying clothes, you go to the area that's uh-huh. close.
That's right.
If you're going to be buying this. So when you go there, just what you need is in that line. Mm-hmm. It's almost like tomato line. You go to that, you know, so
that's
they're
right.
probably getting from the same source. So that's what you're going to get. So you go to that section. So
yeah, it's bananas and
yeah.
oranges. So part of my micro business training has actually been, though, is to say when you have an opportunity, one of you sell bread. One of you sell oranges. One of you sell spread that out, and that way you're not crushing each other's marketing conditions, you know, mm-hmm. too. So, like I said, all of us is just basics we take for granted here.
Yeah.
Ruthie comes back and she says, Derek, what if I could take and go to all the vendors in the surrounding villages, and if they wanted to have a savings account, If I printed up the little savings books and I go pick it up, I know even though you're the vice president of the bank, you can't take individual deposits, but if we deposit it as a collective, then whatever interest you pay as my ministry, I will pass that interest back to the vendors. And all I'll do is cover my fuel costs to do the pickups. Because Ruthie is actually a mortician. And as part of her ministry, she has sewing skills. She actually makes the traditional garments required for Muslim, Christian, non-believer. And then, but what she uses that ministry for is when she goes in to make the funeral arrangements, she has an opportunity to witness to them, even though they've lost one of their family members. Now she can approach them to say, there is a way to be saved, you know, type thing. So as part of this, she was doing it for the community. Well, they started with 150 original members basically 3.5 years ago. And as of last August, they have 7,000 members. Derek actually retired from the bank. He went ahead and retired early. They took all their savings. There's another gentleman there, Chrisman, in the area that actually owns a hotel. And he put in capital. They put in their entire savings. And they built a full-blown credit union. And now they have 4 offices. And what's interesting is while I was there a year or so ago, I was in one of the offices out on one of the coastal plain areas where a lot of fishing goes on, typical fishing village. Of course, poverty is straw huts there, almost all of them, you know, and things. Well, this gentleman happened to come in. He's a fisherman. He just came off the docks, and he's making a deposit. So Derek says, I want you to meet this man, Gary. And so we met. He was sharing his story with me, and here's his story. And Derek had stated, he said, Gary, in the last 9 months, this man has saved $1,410, which is staggering in that kind of poverty. He said, but here's the reason why we put this office here. It's very typical of this man's story. And this man explained, he said, what would happen? I'd go out in my boat, and I'd catch a load of fish, and of course, I'd come in, I'd sell them on the dock to the wholesaler or whoever's buying. And now I've got some cash in my hand, but I know I need to get my motor serviced on my boat. I know I need to repair my boat or whatever. But I go home with my cash, and all of a sudden, either my brother's coming to me wanting to borrow money, people in the village know I've got money, so everybody's coming to me. He said, now that they have the office here in the credit union, I come from the dock here. I deposit my money. So when I get home, if someone asks me if they can borrow, I have none to borrow. He says, the only way I've been able to save, but again, it refers back to that whole collectivism process and the culture that's around typically the West African people as a collective. They share amongst themselves, you know, which is good in one way, but it can be self-defeating on the other way. So now he can maintain his boat. He can do the things he needs to do. He can take care of his family. And it even gets back to the thing he said, you know, before I would have had to have sold one of my other boats or something to take care of an upcoming wedding, where now I don't have to do that because I have money and savings. So like I said, there's a whole big cultural thing that affects a lot of this thinking. But like I said, this has just been all off of the true savings.
How long ago was that, Gary?
This actually started, like I said, about...
I mean, when it initially went to that group of people and they got those people to put in. How long ago was that?
That started 4 or 4.5 years ago.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. So, and again, I share all these things with you because all the things we talked about are applicable. And there's a few things we'll talk about in the North, like I said, where they say absolutely don't do this, that you cannot succeed at this. But, and I'm not saying they have proven it can be done under a certain dynamic. And those are things, too, I want to share with you. So, but basically what they did is, between their investment personally and the guy with the hotel system, they probably put in about $30,000 once they started seeing, hey, these people are putting money in every week. And what they do, where obviously the loan sharks typically charge anywhere from about 40 to 80% interest rates, it's staggering. Can you and I mean to save money, can you imagine putting $10 in and in a year you get two back? Because you're on an 80% rate charge for holding your savings. commonplace. So the banks obviously have pretty steep, but what they did, because they operate this as a ministry, this couple actually travels all over southern Ghana teaching financial savings. They go to churches, they go to colleges, they go to schools. And they tell them, say, hey, you need to try to set up your own personal savings, whether it's in the groups, whether it's you first. If you cannot borrow from your group, then you should probably come see us, and we'll do it for about half of what a bank will do it for, which is even a better rate. And it's the same way as it is here. You typically get a better rate from a savings and credit union than you do a bank. So they're actually able to fund themselves as well as maintain the offices, but they're providing a much greater service, you know, for them. So anyway, it's just one of those unique success stories. See, that's a picture of Sege again. This is an interesting story, and at Sege, the church that just went by, like I said, John went back and shared, as you were telling us about, that your parents were in, I believe it was, the savings groups and those rotations. Very similar as far as what John has going in southern Ghana at Sege Baptist Church. This gentleman was part of one of those savings groups, and there's three of them in that church. Like I said, he went to the bank to be able to purchase a taxi. Bank said, no deal. So he was sharing his story with John, his pastor, saying, you know, I just feel like this is what I'm supposed to do. So John actually went to the members of the three groups. He said, you know, one group can't help him, but all three combined could. And it's larger than we would normally do. But he's a good member of our church. He's in good standing. I feel like we can trust him. So I think if it's agreeable with you guys, we should create the loan. He paid the loan back on his taxi in 90 days. That was incredible in itself. But then, like I said, as of when I was there in August, he's got two more taxi cab vans. He's hired two other drivers. They're members of the church. All of them are tithing, and that's how the church was able to take care of its own needs, you know, as a piece of that. So, and then all of a sudden he takes, because he needs more mechanical services, he works with another member of the church who's a mechanic. This guy, by being able to have some consistent work maintaining his vehicles, then he helped him set up his own mechanical shop. So, that cycle is constantly pushing out. Mm-hmm. And that's what we were talking about yesterday. You know, I may can only help one. But if I can help one, and that one can help one, then it becomes five, then it's ten, and it goes on and on. That's been the beauty of a lot of what I've seen. This lady, this story is really unique. She had a table about this size at her local village, just selling a few widgets. Now, she did not attend any of our formalized classes, but by being involved with the group and Pastor John working with her to understand, to say, hey, don't let the money from your little business here get intermingled into your personal finances. Pay yourself.
Yes.
But save out of the business to reinvest in the business. So I was over there about 2 years ago, and she had gone from one of these little tables basically to a container, a 20-foot container with a side cut out of it. When I went back the next time, that container had been hooked up, and now it was two containers on a poured slab, and this year she bought her first car. But again, it's the concept of understanding, separate the money, reinvest back into the business model.
And that's, did y'all do some training with her?
No, actually, the locals, the nationals trained her. I had never met the lady until she was already moving from the table to her first container. But that, again, that's the whole concept that I wanted to share as far as for you, see why to understand. That is way more important than any one individual like myself. I mean, I can be a catalyst or a dusty can or whoever's trying to help you. But really, once after a certain point, it boils down to the people within the organization that are there. And part of the thing that I find with this, guys, again, Americans want to give. We're giving and caring people. But we're also an impatient people. So when I can go back and I can share this kind of story and this kind of success, and it's not every time, but in Ghana, for what we've done, it's been more often than not. So then people just typically want to be more part of something like that. Okay?